The United States Postal Service has played a major role in the nation's political, economic, and social development, according to our guest this hour. And she says we need to understand that role if we are to have the post office around in the future. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. How important is the post office today? How important is it to you? Do you think that the post office is worth saving? Do we really need it with current technology and other mail delivery options? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us Winifred Gallagher. She is the author of How the Post Office Created America. She has written for numerous publications, including The Atlantic, Rolling Stone, and The New York Times. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what inspired you to write a book about the history of the post office?
Well, I'm actually speaking to you right now from my home in Wyoming, where I live half the year. The other half the year I live in New York City. And it was really driving from the east to the west and back again that made me realize what an enormous country this is, how much of it is still, even in the 21st century, very rural. And I began to think about what was it that held it together, this vast and also very various, both culturally and physically, very various region. And I began to see that it was really our communication and information network, which was a top priority of the founders. The post office was actually founded a year before the Declaration of Independence was even signed. And in 1792, George Washington, Benjamin Rush, James Madison, some of the other founders decided to really make it the most important and biggest enterprise of the federal government, which it remained really arguably into World War One.
Yeah, well, talk a little bit about that. Why did the founders, what was their mission behind creating the post office?
Well, first of all, they were confronting a country that was already moving westward, that was largely wild. There were no roads, there were no communities, there were no towns in a lot of it. America was really mostly concentrated along a narrow band of the East Coast. So they had to come up with a way to develop the country. And one of the first decisions they made was that a democracy could only work if the people knew what government officials were up to. So they needed an informed electorate. If a country government by, for, and of the people were going to work, the people had to know what was going on.
And they thought the post office could help do that?
Yeah. Back then, and for a very long time, mail was the media. That was it. So to create this informed electorate, they prioritized not letters, but newspapers. Oh. They were determined that every American everywhere, even in this vast wilderness, would have a inexpensively delivered newspaper that would be uncensored and would expose them to a lot of news and varied opinions. This, actually, in a presidential year, you can appreciate this because it's really that back in 1792, that decision that sparked our lively, uncensored, very contentious political culture that was designed by the founders. And the post office was really what enabled that political culture to take off. When de Tocqueville came to America in 1831, even in the wilds of Michigan, he said, he was astounded that Americans would come out of their cabins and little huts and able to talk about current events, not only in their own country, but in Europe. He was flabbergasted. In Europe, governments told the people what they were allowed to know, but in America, people were allowed to know everything. He was astounded by their political sophistication and by the fact that even in our country that was still wet behind the ears, we already had five times more post offices than France and twice as many as Great Britain.
That is, it is just amazing too. But the post office would get the newspaper to someone in Wyoming, what, several days later or what?
Well, Wyoming would come, of course, much later.
Yeah, right.
But that's really where we should go next. So once the decision was made to create this informed electorate, the question was exactly what you raised. How are you going to get these newspapers to these people in this unbelievably rural country? So they had to create a social landscape that was organized around villages and towns that were each centered on a post office, and then they had to connect these post offices with post roads. So really the whole kind of structure of the way the country developed was around post office and the delivery of mail. It also, the post office was also a way to impose the federal footprint on vast areas of contested mail. I mean, remember that big parts of the continent were claimed by France, Spain, England. So getting a post office there was a way to sort of plant the flag, literally. And to get the mail to the people, even it's one thing to establish a post office, to say that this town is going to have a post office, and then there has to be a route to get the mail there, but who's going to bring the mail there? So this was the beginning of the really very successful and continuing to this day collaboration between business and government. The post office subsidized the nation's transportation contractors to carry the mail. At first, this was literally a man on a horse. They were called post riders, and they would carry, sometimes leading another horse, they would carry the mail from one place to another. Pretty soon, they were superseded, at least in places where there were some roads, by stagecoaches. And one of the most interesting parts of my research actually concerned the stagecoach. We forget now that the stagecoach was really ruled the roads for much longer than most of us think, not just in the West. We associate it with, you know, John Wayne in an action movie, but even in the East, the stagecoach was the dominant means of transportation. And they would not have been able to start this transportation grid without postal subsidies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it's really the combination of the passenger fares and the post office that allowed them to operate and allowed Americans to travel. So the mail coach that Tocqueville took was not just a way to deliver mail, it was a way to circulate people around the country.
All right, so the post office had a whole lot to do with developing our transportation grid. The post office helped create an informed electorate and was certainly involved in the politics of the day. How much of a role did the post office play in creating or expanding America's economy?
It played a huge role in the economy. First of all, as we were just talking briefly about the collaboration between the government in terms of subsidies to the transportation businesses, which was a huge thing to get our transportation system up and running. It also enabled the national market. You couldn't, if you were making widgets in Boston, the only way you could communicate with a customer in New York would be by the mail. And remember, for a long time, until the time of Civil War, actually, the only way to circulate money was in the mail. People put actual money in the mail and mailed it and hoped that it would get there safely. So that was a huge factor in business world.
Mm-hmm.
It was very important in helping America shift from the agrarian economy to the industrial economy. You couldn't scale up and become like a business nation, which we really began to do towards the middle of the 19th century, without a very efficient way to communicate various merchants and businessmen, lawyers. Around the Civil War era, the post inaugurated money orders. This allowed, it actually began as a way to allow Union soldiers to send their salaries home safely to their loved ones, and it became much more widely applied and was a huge advantage. And actually, in the early part of the 20th century, there was postal savings banking, which went on for into the 1960s, which was a way that Americans, many of them rural, who lived in parts of the country that the big banking industry didn't want to bother with, would have an efficient way to save their money and make, you know, a small amount of interest. It was a very successful program, particularly around the time of the Depression.
Let me jump in because we do have a break that we need to take, and we want to invite listeners to join in our conversation on the past, the present, and the future of the post office. Our guest is Winifred Gallagher. She is the author of How the Post Office Created America, A History. And she says that the history of the post office is nothing less than the story of America. And we will welcome your questions for her. We'll welcome your thoughts on the problems that the post office is experiencing today, and whether we're going to have a post office in the future. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Winifred Gallagher. She is the author of How the Post Office Created America, A History. We're welcoming your questions for her, maybe some memories for her, maybe some thoughts on the future of the U.S. Postal Service. We know that it's been facing some money issues, and there had been talk about cutting back on Saturday delivery and other ways to bolster the coffers. We'll talk a little bit as we go along on the problems that the U.S. Postal Service is facing today and what needs to happen to shore that up. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Winifred, obviously we talked about some of the very early history of the post office, but I just wanted you to just talk about your, you know, the claim that the post office created America. That's pretty bold. So you think without the post office, we'd be a very different country?
Oh, I think very much so. We talked a little bit about its impact on our politics, which was creating the informed electorate and a political culture where people were encouraged to know what was going on and to debate what the government should do. It physically created our landscape of post roads and villages centered on post offices. We didn't touch on the social effects of the post office, which is another thing that I notice here in my town in Wyoming, where the post office is still the center of social life. Post offices were the original community centers. They were the original information hubs where people gathered, talked to the postmaster, who knew everything that was going on. People read their letters, shared their letters. People who got newspapers circulated their newspapers. So it was really a gathering place. Interestingly, the first post offices were very often taverns or businesses, inns, that it was really not until, you know, certainly into the middle of the 19th century that post offices were standalone buildings.
That's pretty funny. So you could go have a beer and grab your mail.
Exactly. Very much so. Very much so. You earlier, before the break, asked about the economy. There are two other things I'd like to mention. The post office, by essentially subsidizing them, making it very cheap for publishers to circulate their newspapers and magazines, that was a huge spur to the publishing industry. This enabled somebody who had $50 or $100 and wanted to set up as a publisher to buy a press and to do so because he was confident that he'd be able to circulate his product at an affordable price. And in turn, by subsidizing publishing, they also the post office also subsidized the advertising industry, which really began to take off in the last third of the 19th century.
So that's when junk mail started.
Yeah, exactly. And big national advertising campaigns. This was around the time that the big brands started coming out, Ivory soap and identifiable products, and they wanted to have a national presence. And very importantly, the post office helped develop our consumer culture, particularly with parcel post. So around the turn of the 20th century, Americans were still, 60% of them still lived in rural areas, farm areas, and they were pretty much stuck with paying the prices that their local general store wanted to charge for consumer goods. So they were paying a lot, inflated prices for a kind of a small range of goods. And the big mail order companies like Sears and Roebuck and Montgomery Ward were able to offer many more products, but people had to pay very exorbitant delivery services to private carriers like American Express and Wells Fargo. So when parcel post came in, they set up direct competition with the private carriers who had created monopolies in different parts of the country, and they gave people much more reasonable rates for their consumer goods, which was just an enormous boon to rural Americans. And lastly, the post office always was and still remains a major employer. It's second only to Walmart as an employer, a civilian employer in America. So it's very powerful in that regard too.
Let's take some calls. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you would like to ask a question or share an experience or a thought on the post office for our guest, Winifred Gallagher, who is the author of How the Post Office Created America. And our first caller is Melinda in De Pere. Hello, Melinda.
Hi, Joy. And hi, Winifred. What a fabulous topic this is. And I had one comment, but I just want to say one other thing. Many of the post offices in Wisconsin are listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and they have plaques, and some of them have markers. The towns have put markers up telling the history of the post office building. And inside, many of them are beautiful murals that have been painted, in the early 1900s. So making that building just a beautiful historical site.
Very nice.
But
yeah.
What I wanted to say originally was I have seen posts when the mail service used to send children through the Postal Service. And it's a fascinating story, and I'd love to hear your comments on that.
So the post office mailed children. Oh, my goodness. It went afoot?
I don't think it happened a whole lot. When parcel post came in, which we were just talking about before the caller, people really got very imaginative about what could be sent by mail. There were a lot of cartoons people were sending, and I mean this was like actually a big program called Farm to Table. People, farmers were sending eggs and poultry and vegetables to customers in the city, leading to cartoons with showing post offices with like a pig pen in one corner and
yeah.
Things like that. There were occasions where people would send. There was one notorious case actually where somebody mailed a child. It was cheaper to mail the child to visit the grandparents, I think it was, than to send the child, than to pay the regular train fare.
That's funny.
It was a very funny time. I also wanted to speak to what the caller mentioned about the postal murals and post offices being a beautiful, beautiful places. They often are, and the real hero of the usual story about this is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. When he was president, he was himself a big stamp collector. He actually designed certain stamps, especially the one that's identified as Whistler's mother. But he also took a very keen interest in the geography of his family's Dutchess County region along the Hudson River in New York. and he personally supervised the details of 6 post offices that he put up during the Depression. Roosevelt felt that giving people, and this happened all over America, not just in his backyard, he felt that building beautiful buildings and illustrating them with scenery of the local people was a way to cheer Americans up during the heart of the Depression and to send a message that even though times were hard, the government was coping and moving ahead. For the same reason, he very much encouraged the national parks movement. But some of the post offices from that Depression era have these really very moving murals, a lot of them dignifying local people who were doing their everyday work. They were not meant to glorify the founding fathers or the local elite. They were meant to glorify average Americans during a very difficult period, and they are really, it's wonderful to visit some of them.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Melinda, for bringing up those two great points. I wanted to talk a little bit about when Melinda brought up mailing children, and I know it was very, very short-lived, but I thought about the cost of mailing all of these items, and the thought that even today, it's whatever, less than 50 cents to mail something across the world practically, and how did that evolve? I mean, what was the thought of pretty inexpensive postage?
Yeah, the idea was that Americans, this was part of being an American, to have access to communications and information. It was the founders and those who followed them really believed in this. And in fact, I argue that the decisions they made in 1792 really set us on course to become the global information and communication superpower that we are today. It's not an accident that America has always led in those two areas, communications and information. It's not an accident that it was our government, the Defense Department, created the internet. So I think it's something that we can be proud of. It's part of why the post office, why I called the book How the Post Office Created America. It really, that's one of our major national characteristics.
But I guess what I was getting at too, and we actually have a caller who wants to talk a little bit about internet type issues, but what about, was the thought we need this this service available to the masses at a very, very low cost so everybody can take part? It was sort of, it's not just the rich could mail something.
Right, it's very democratic, and that's a huge distinction. At the time when the founders were figuring all this out, in Europe, there was nothing, our post office was really very radical. There was nothing like that. There was no thought that the people should know what was going on. There was no thought that the people should have access to postal service. Throughout history, both postal service and information about the government had been restricted to an elite. So this was a real decision that our government made, and they decided, interestingly, you brought up how did we pay for all of this? Originally, the founders came up with a kind of Robin Hood scheme. So letters, which at the time cost a lot of money to send and were mostly sent by businessmen, lawyers, government officials, they used the high postage on letter mail to pay for cheap newspapers for everybody.
Interesting. Yeah, the creation of the internet certainly had a big impact on the U.S. Postal Service. I mean, that's one of the reasons we hear today that there are some money problems. We're doing email more, and we're not mailing as much as we used to. Talk some about that.
Yeah, email isn't really the reason. We're always hearing about the big postal deficit. The lion's share of it is it goes back to a bill passed in 2006, the Postal Accountability and Enforcement Act, which really started the post office's acute crisis. They demanded that the post office pre-fund its retiree health care benefits at a rate of $5 billion for 10 years. So that was a that essentially meant pre-funding 75 years ahead. It was very shortly denounced as an outrageous demand, but it was still the law. And that same law imposed very strict restrictions on postal innovation. The post office is prevented from offering a lot of services that could make the money. So that's much more important, I believe, in terms of the postal deficit than email. In fact, there's no question that email has been a serious blow to first-class letter mail, which was always the post office's strongest suit. But interestingly, now the amount of packages the post office is delivering from internet purchases is so profitable that it's making up for the revenue lost in email.
Oh, sure.
So, postal insiders, people like to say, the internet giveth and it taketh away. It does both.
Let me take a call from Thomas in Chippewa Falls. Hello, Thomas.
Hello.
Go ahead, Thomas.
All right. Well, I'd like to open by saying that here in Chippewa Falls, we have one of those very beautiful and very historic post offices right in the middle of town. And it is also like a center of legal activity in terms of passports as well and sending official documentation.
Mm-hmm.
And my specific question was on the recent new ruling with net neutrality. I personally don't see the post office's role into the future being nearly as secure simply because the founding purposes of the post office that you'd mentioned before on this show seem to be covered pretty well by the internet these days. How will the post office evolve in the face of net neutrality and future difficulties?
And by net neutrality, you just mean what, the internet of having access to all of the information at our fingertips, or what?
Well, right. So, and recently there was a ruling at that net neutrality guaranteed that big multimedia companies could not segregate source material and, you know, slow down
right.
Internet for some people. So basically, everybody does have a right to internet, and it's a right to have it equally distributed. And
good point. Thank you, Thomas. So, Winifred, what do you think about the net neutrality and the internet and access to all this information in our computers that we don't need the post office delivering our newspapers anymore?
All right. First of all, it's an excellent question, but I think we need to get a little background, some context for why the post office didn't get into the email business. It goes way back into the first part of the 20th century when the post office, which really hit its peak in between 1890 and World War I in terms of its power, the two world wars and the Depression starved the post office of resources. It just got no money for a very long time. And at the same time this happened, America's mail volume doubled. So the post offices were stuck with using technology that would have been often familiar to Benjamin Franklin while they're dealing with twice as much mail. So the post office, as some of the older listeners will remember, had a big meltdown in the 1960s and the 1970s when the system just broke down. They were just starved. They needed to automate, and they didn't have the resources to do that. So this led to, in 1970, the Postal Reorganization Act, which turned the post office department into the United States Postal Service, which was supposed to run like a business mm-hmm. to eliminate some of the problems that had been accumulating. Unfortunately, unlike a business, the post office was subjected to congressional interference, as it still is, and it was forced to maintain very low prices despite rising costs, all of this while receiving no tax dollars. The good news is that they actually were able to do that, and they modernized, exceptionally modernized, the handling of traditional paper mail. But they lost heart when it came time to go digital. The digital revolution, the obvious thing for the post office to do would be to say email is just the logical extension of paper mail and to go in that direction. But they were, postal management and Congress were so freaked out by the recent crises in the 60s and 70s that they just they couldn't get it together to take that big step, which was, you know, a terrible mistake, I think.
Jim in Wanakee has a question along these lines. Hi, Jim.
Well, hi. Yeah, it's more of a comment, but I think it would be a huge mistake for Congress to continue this effort to privatize the Postal Service. You know, the speaker had already alluded to, you know, this pension way ahead of time. But because for one reason, I think this infrastructure is already existing. And if they privatized it, I mean, like right now, the other day I went down and I purchased sent a magazine and I went to UPS. I thought it'd be cheaper than the post office. Well, the post office was half the cost, less than half the cost.
Right.
And so anyway, that and the other thing is that a lot of people, you're talking about the Internet, a lot of folks like elderly people, they aren't into the Internet, or they may be out in rural areas. They can't get their medicine. And I would think that maybe the post office needs to modify a little bit. You got that infrastructure. You got all those trucks. They could to these people in remote areas. They could take medicines to the disabled and the, you know, a different kind of a function. You know, keep that infrastructure, because if it was turned over to UPS and some of the others, they would have to recreate their own infrastructure, you know, to serve the function that the United States Post Office is doing.
All right. Thanks, Jim. We have a break, and then we'll have our guest respond to your suggestions, your comments after our break. Winifred Gallagher is our guest. She is the author of How the Post Office Created America, A History. So we are talking about the history and the future of the U.S. Postal Service. What questions do you have? What do you think needs to happen to keep the post office around a little longer? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll actually get our guest to talk about how serious of financial shape the U.S. Postal Service is in today and what sorts of reforms are needed, or if it really is all that serious. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Winifred Gallagher. She is author of How the Post Office Created America, talking about the role that the post office, or now the United States Postal Service, has played in our nation's political, economic, and social development. And we'll talk about what needs to happen in the future as well. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So Winifred, our caller just before our break, had a number of different points. Let me ask first, he said it was a big mistake that Congress privatized the post office. Talk about exactly what kind of, is the U.S. Postal Service privatized?
No. I think the caller was correct in putting his finger on Congress. Of course, the president is ultimately responsible for the post office, but it's really Congress that monitors it and tells it what it can and cannot do. So postal management is separate from Congress, and they often have divergent ideas about which way the post office should go. A lot of lobbyists, there are many industries and large groups that are powerful lobbies that are invested in the postal status quo, the big junk mailers, the big postal unions, and they also pay for political campaigns. so the postal business in the government has been very politicized, and one reason why there has not been a Reform Act since 2006 is because of these the pressures on Congress, political pressures, to keep things the way they are and to serve various groups instead of the citizenry. But the caller brought up a very important question of the future of the post office, and he started with privatization. I see that there are three options. One is privatization, but it's not widely popular. Most Americans don't want it. They don't see why they should choose between traditional mail and email. They like both. The post office takes no tax dollars. It's a benign institution, as the caller mentioned that he thought that the post office ought to deliver medicines. In fact, the post office does deliver medicines for a lot of people right here mm-hmm. in my town in Wyoming. He also mentioned price. The post office is much cheaper. Parcel post is much cheaper than UPS and FedEx. And being in the business, the post office keeps a lid on what the private contractors can charge. If there were no post office, FedEx and UPS would charge much more. So the people who advocate that the post office should be privatized, that makes for kind of stirring letters to the editor in newspapers, but it's not a popular option. And it also doesn't show that these folks understand how our national delivery system actually works. These FedEx, UPS, and the USPS are not so much competitors anymore, as the term is, co-opators. They're frenemies. They each help each other. The post office visits nearly every address in America nearly every day. Neither of the other two private agencies do that, and they depend on the post office in many cases to do that last bit of delivery for them. In the same light, the post office pays FedEx to carry U.S. mail on its planes. FedEx carries its own mail at night and post office mail by day. So it's already in the tradition of the post office, a kind of a public-private collaborative effort. So I don't think privatization is going to come about. The second option is to retrofit the idea of postal service for the digital age so that the post office would give us all electronic addresses the way it gave us our physical addresses, hack-proof electronic mailboxes, lockboxes, something that would be very useful, verification and authentication for legal and business transactions. And you see a lot in the news these days about bringing back postal banking, because almost 25% of Americans are ignored by the conventional banking system, and they have to use payday lenders and check cashing services that charge terrible fees.
And you're saying, though, that so we could go to the post office and withdraw some money, so get a loan.
Yeah, you'd have a card that would allow you to use ATM machines and, you know, send money abroad and do various transactions like that. That these people are paying, mm-hmm. you know, outrageous fees to do. You could also, I've never understood why post offices don't have banks of computers in them the way all libraries do now, so that people who don't have internet at home could go online. It's a very popular service at the three libraries I use. You have to take a number to get in line to get on a computer. But so that idea of bringing the post office fully into the digital age has some appealing characteristics, but it's politically a very hard sell now. The federal government doesn't want to pay anything. It would be equivalent to, you know, the U.S. highway system or rural electrification. They were big, big government efforts that brought great rewards, but the government was willing to spend. So whether the government is willing to do that kind of infrastructure spending, it's hard for me to imagine now. So I
And the third option is we do have a full line of full bank of phone callers who want to get
in,
too.
The third option is to pare down As the previous caller mentioned, we do have this incredible delivery system, a physical delivery system that took 240 years to develop. We don't want to give that up. So they would pare away unprofitable services and concentrate on profitable ones like parcel delivery, which rose by 50% between 2010 and 2015. And that would preserve the national hard copy delivery system that's very important, especially now for voting. 20% of votes in the 2014 election were cast by mail. So I think that's the likeliest kind of a leaner, meaner post office. I think that's the likeliest outcome.
Let's take some calls. Let's go to Kyle in Milwaukee next. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. Hi, Joy. I just wanted to comment. I actually used to work for UPS, but... And we did do a lot of what we call shirt bullets back and forth between the post office and delivering to those. But my comment was on the pension. I was wondering, I had an employee at UPS and his wife used to work for the post office, and he was telling me that the reason the post office doesn't seem profitable is because the pension has to be funded so far out in advance that it's kind of unimaginable. I was wondering if your caller could comment on that.
Yeah, we touched on that earlier. How about if we remove that regulation, Winifred?
Yeah, actually, I just want to correct something. It's not pensions. There's no question that of the post office not fulfilling pensions. It's prefunding the retiree health care benefits. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, this is becoming a huge concern, not just for the post office, but for all governments and industries because of the rising cost of health care.
Right, but I think the Postal Service says that the federal government, you know, doesn't do this to other entities, and that it's ridiculously.
The Senate has passed a bill, and the House has very recently passed a bill that could be turned into the next Postal Reform Act, which should happen. And, you know, for some of the reasons we touched on earlier, it just doesn't seem to happen. But Congress does need to fix it. The caller's absolutely right, and only Congress can fix it.
Yeah. Mike in Slinger is with us now. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I don't know. He just covered everything I wanted to talk about. I always think of UPS or FedEx. They would love to have the city of Chicago, the city of Milwaukee, Detroit, New York, apartment buildings. You've got 10,000 boxes in one building. They don't have to drive anywhere. The Postal Service, I am a retired postal worker, by the way, rural carrier. We go everywhere. We go out to the smallest towns in Wyoming and Wisconsin. We are nationwide, and these other companies don't do it because I work for the post office, and UPS would come, and they would drop off their parcels, and we would deliver them for UPS, and we would also deliver parcels for FedEx because they didn't want to get involved in the transportation costs. So anyway, I'm 100%, and I just read an article in the Progressive, too, about bringing back the banks in inner cities because there are no banks in the inner cities, and people could use them as savings, have savings accounts, checking accounts, everything, and like you say, it was back in the 60s. Was done in the 60s, and I'd like to see it go back that way. It would go a long way to help people in the inner city.
Thanks very much, Mike. I guess areas that we've covered, but he did have a question that I thought we didn't really go into great depth. He just said, why is the post office being politicized? Was Mike's question that he posed to our producer? Why is it so politicized?
Well, because there are many groups, both. The postal, for example, the big postal labor unions, remember that this is the second biggest civilian employer in America. So the labor unions don't want to, for example, have Saturday delivery because that would mean fewer jobs and fewer hours for their workers. The junk mailers, Saturday delivery is a good way to discuss this. The junk mailers want to maintain Saturday delivery because they want to get their ads for the weekend sales out to shoppers on the weekends. So even though Americans for at least 50 years have said that they could easily live without Saturday letter delivery, we still have it because of these special interest groups that lobby Congress. It's true.
Yeah, we have well, let's take one more call from Jake in Appleton. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I'm calling today. I just wanted to chime in a little bit. I'm a small business owner. I own a company that makes boutique yo-yo string. And anyways, I used to utilize the post office quite often, but I have switched to UPS just because the post office continually would misplace packages and cannot match the speed that UPS can ship at. And so I've always said that I would be in favor of it, like, being privatized, either bought out or just, you know, closed down. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think historically it's always been able to fund itself just through the dollars that come in when you go and pay for postage. I believe that Congress has passed a couple bills, I think, that, like, gives them tax dollars to keep running, you know, and that's not sustainable. And with the current options available today to UPS and FedEx.
Yeah, well, a couple of points. Is that true? Has Congress had to infuse tax dollars into the Postal Service?
No, the Post Office doesn't receive tax dollars.
Right.
It did for a while after the Postal Reorganization Act of 1970. The Congress realized the Post Office couldn't just go overnight to being self-supporting, so it was sustained for some years back then. But by and large, until the Accountability Act of 2006 that was so disastrous, it by and large supported itself. It really, which is kind of a miracle when you think that they were continuing to, for the price of a stamp, charging the same to send a birthday card to your friend down the street as to a friend in Alaska. It was kind of a miracle that they did that. I think what the caller is talking about is a very regrettable problem that, especially in more rural areas, people are really feeling because the post office is under such financial constraints and is being told to cut back, cut back, cut back. They've closed down a lot of big mail distribution centers that really impact rural areas, especially in the West, and they've done a lot of service cuts. And so, you know, the service isn't as good as it was. In cities, it's still pretty good. But a lot of the country is suffering because of the budget cuts.
Yeah. Well, we have just a little more than a minute to go. What are your thoughts on the future of the United States Post Office? Will we have one? 50 years from now?
Yeah, I think the Post Office still delivers 40% of the entire world's mail. It's a linchpin of American business. And I think it will age gracefully. It will continue to supply profitable services. And most importantly for the country, it will continue to give America a physical delivery system that, in a very uncertain world, is capable of responding to emergencies, bringing medicines, and supporting our democracy.
And we still have just 30 seconds to go. You see that happening through through option number three. Tell us what option number three was going to be.
To pair the services back to profitable ones such as parcel delivery, and use that income to hold up the entire system and perhaps respond differently in a different time.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Winifred Gallagher is the author of How the Post Office Created America, a History. We thank her for being with us, and we thank you for listening. And we thank producers Nyasia Ellison and Kai Brito. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We will be hearing On Point coming up next. And tomorrow at this time, we'll have another program for you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.